on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? We are blazing through the month of October. That means basketball season is knocking on the door. And we get to talk a little Coyote basketball. We'll talk women's basketball with Kerry Amby coming up in the show next week. Head men's basketball coach Eric Peterson in the YokeCast podcast to get a preview of his team ahead of their exhibition contest. The Coyote women's basketball team will play an exhibition this Saturday in Sioux Falls. It all goes to support Live Inspired 365. We'll talk more about that with Coach Kerry Amy. Also, volleyball in the midst of their season. Sam Unti joins the podcast this week, and we get a conversation with J.W. Cox and a preview of the UNI Panthers. That's all coming up here in the conversation. Let's get it started with Sam Unti. She is a volleyball player who transferred here from Louisville in her first season at South Dakota.
Sam, we're working through the conference season right now. How have things been for you as you've adapted in your first year at South Dakota?
I've loved it. It's been super awesome. My teammates are super awesome. I feel like everyone gets along super well. We always talk about kind of how the community of USD, but also just like our team culture, kind of sets us apart from, you know, other teams. And I think that's really true this year, is like we all are genuinely like best friends. And so that's just really fun to work through those kind of things with your best friends, you know, even the highs and the lows. Like, it doesn't really matter as long as we're doing it with the people that we love. So it's been really awesome. We have been rolling in conference play now. We just won our last two. We had a big week last week, so that was awesome. We have a big week coming up too, so that will be fun. But yeah, we're just kind of rolling with the punches, and it's been good.
You talk about that team culture, and it's been talked about here for a long time. And for some, it's been people who've been in the program and they've gotten to understand it. And you in your first year, what was that like to show up here? And, you know, I'm sure when you go to a new place, there's kind of some uncertainty,
yeah.
But feels like things are able to adapt quickly. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I came from a very tight-knit place before. I mean, Louisville was very tight-knit and everybody loved everybody and we were all like sisters. And so I was kind of expecting that, not sure if I was going to get that again, but just like expecting that coming in, because I've known the coaches for a while. Since I was little, they came to like our camps at my club because I played at Cairo's in Sioux Falls. So I had known them for a while. It's always been like USD has always kind of been in the back of my mind, like just knowing that they're there, and I've always loved to go watch them play, you know. They're just really fun. So I think everybody definitely welcomed me with open arms. I mean, obviously we moved to Spain this summer, which was a really cool opportunity, and just like even then meeting the boosters, or like they're always wanting to get us stuff, or they're like, oh hey Sam, like just knowing me by name, like things like that, super awesome. And so I felt like a part of the community ever since I got here. They've never made me feel unwelcome in any way. Everyone is just super sweet and they really love Coyote volleyball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And they loved volleyball where you came from before. You were at Louisville, started your career there, played in some games there, and obviously a program that has been really, really good. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, that is an unforgettable experience. I loved absolutely everything about it. The team, the coaches. I met some of my best friends there, like the girls there, Peyton Peterson, Naylis Cabello, and Ava Otterback. They'll be in my wedding. Like, they're just the best. They're the best humans ever. And so just getting to learn from people too, like Anna DeBeer and Elena Scott, obviously one of the best to do it ever, is just, it was really interesting. It was really eye-opening because, you know, you go into college and it's already kind of a daunting thing, but just like at the level that we were doing it, and actually, like, you know, last year the national championship had 25,000 plus people. So just like doing that and like having to serve in that, like obviously there's like jitters and things like that, but that was an unforgettable experience, and I would never regret that in my entire life. That was amazing.
Obviously, they had some changes. You decided to make a change. You're now closer to home, about 100 miles from where you grew up or so. Was that part of your decision in South Dakota? What led to the decision to come to USD?
So I am medical biology, and so I want to be a dentist. That's the hope, that's the goal. And so obviously Louisville was very athletically motivated, but not so much academically. And so I just felt kind of like, you know, we were kind of slipping through the cracks in that way. And so I kind of had to put future over fun there. And I've always been very much like academics come first. And so that was a main part of it, is like, obviously I know that this school has a really good medical school. Like, I'll be really well prepared, which is, you know, why we go to college in the first place. And so that was kind of in the back of my mind. So I knew I had to make a change there. As for why I picked here, I mean, like I said, I've known the coaches for a long time. I knew that we have been a successful program, but even that doesn't even really matter to me. It's just kind of like, you know, the feeling of the people felt like family. And so that to me was really important. And just like, yeah, the really good school. I am obviously closer to home. 2 hours is a lot closer than 12. And so that didn't hurt. But yeah, those are kind of my reasons why I left and why here.
2 hours from home. I don't know how many people have been through your hometown. How would you describe where you grew up?
Yeah, where I grew up. So my high school team, so we'll just start, I'm a farm kid, okay. My town, the closest town to us, has 200 people. I mean, everybody knows everyone, everyone's in everyone's business. My high school had about 150 people. I graduated with 32 kids. And so it was, I mean, it's a lot different than what a lot of people expect. And so for that reason, like, you don't get a ton of exposure. So that's why I started club at such a young age. And it's just, yeah, it's kind of far out there. There's not really much to it. I love it. I mean, it's where I'm from. I absolutely love it, but there's not really much to it.
You probably didn't do anything to ever get in trouble, but I always felt like I grew up in a town similar to that, and it felt like your neighbor could tell you were in trouble before you committed the act that would get you in trouble.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so you can't do anything. Everybody knows everything. They're all stuff. They know your secrets before you do, so it's like, yeah, I won't touch on that, you know?
Farm kid.
Yes.
How much farm work did you do growing up?
So I'm the youngest, which means that I kind of get the youngest kid treatment. So yeah. I wouldn't say that I had to do too much. I mean, obviously, too, I had a brother, and so I was, I'm one of two girls, too. And so my older sister definitely did a lot more than I did. You know, she did like she was the one who was doing like FFA projects and things like that and helping my dad. And I was the one who was like, oh, sorry, I can't. I got a club tournament this weekend, like things like that. And so, and my brother's always in the combine helping. And I just kind of, you know, I run meals to the guys when I can find the field. So, I mean, that kind of gives you the idea of what I was up to when I was younger. So I grew up on a farm. I know my way around it, but I don't necessarily consider myself the handiest person in the world.
I love that you threw in when I can find the field.
Yep.
So that means that Siri maps weren't doing it.
Yeah,
all
my dad's
the
like,
time.
No, I'm past this. I'm east west. I'm like, you have to use, I'm directionally challenged, Dad. Like, this is not going to work for me. You have to use, I already passed that sign 10 minutes ago. I don't know. Yeah.
You talk about exposure and playing AAU volleyball, and obviously coming from a smaller town, I mean, this means a lot of travel and it means a lot of time.
Yeah.
Looking back now, how would you describe that? I don't know if you realized it at the time, you know, how much driving and how much time and effort and everything has to go into that, and
yeah,
and money for travel and stuff
yeah,
like that. Do you ever look back at that now and like, wow, they did a lot to make this happen?
Yeah, I mean, I would consider my parents the greatest parents in the world. They sacrificed so many things for me, and like, I can probably count on one hand how many times they actually missed a game. Like, it was never, and it was always during harvest, so it's not like, you know, but yeah, so I was, there's no real clubs around where I grew up, and so we would drive an hour and a half to practice every night, so that's a 3-hour round trip, and so I just remember, like, doing my homework in the car. My mom would drive. I would be taking naps because she had to pick me up from track practice in Fulda because we had to join schools because we were so small. And then we would drive to club so I could play, and then I'd have to do my homework on the way home. And like, I would sometimes, there were weekends, like, because I was a hurdler when I was in high school, and so there were weekends that like we would go compete at True Team or we would go compete at state, and then that next day my parents, like that night, would drive me down to like Des Moines or Omaha or wherever we just happened happened to be that weekend. So, yeah, I definitely think they lost a lot of sleep over me. But they always found a way to make it work. And looking back, it is really crazy. I was just telling someone the other day, I was like, wow, I don't know how I actually did all of that and then managed to wake up at 8 a.m. every day, because now I get annoyed with my one 8 a.m. class a week. But, yeah, I mean, they're the best parents in the world. So sacrificial. They really made everything possible for me.
Yeah, when I went to college, they said, you're used to getting up early. This early class won't be a big deal. Then you're in college, and you're like, yeah, this ain't for me.
Yeah, no, you're like, I can't do this, so thanks for just the one.
This season, you guys have gone through, and there's been some ups and downs, obviously, and you continued to carve out a role with this volleyball team. Coaches have talked about the depth of this team. How have you continued to try to, you know, carve out your own little role, and how would you describe your role to somebody who hasn't been paying attention?
Yeah, I definitely think, like, obviously there are the tangible things, like, so I was a setter in high school, so there are some things that I just kind of have more of a natural ability for, because I just kind of have that versatility. So, like, at a system setting and things like that, like, those are things that I'm trusted with. Right back defense is obviously, like, what I play, and I would consider myself pretty well versed in that, because that's something that I had to play for a lot of years in high school. And so, but then there's also the intangibles, and so I think, like, my team kind of describes me more as, like, the spark plug. Like, I'm that three-year-old player that just kind of comes in to try to make a difference. I try to do the best in whatever way I can, but also, like, I just try to make sure that everybody knows, like, we are a team, we are a family, we're playing as a team. So when I'm out there, I just, like, have the most excitement I have that I can. I get excited for everyone else. I'm kind of that little spark plug that tries to make points, tries to get runs, and that's kind of, like, my role. But I love it. Obviously, we have had some kind of ups and downs, but I think that we have so many amazing tools, and like you said about our depth, is, like, if one person is struggling, that's a great thing about us, is, like, if we're struggling, we know that, like, we're always building up the people in our positions, like, at practice and things like that, so it doesn't make a difference to us whether they go in or we come out. Like, we're just genuinely excited for everyone to see them do their thing. So, yeah, depth is really important on this team. I think that we're really rolling.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the season continues to go for your team. You mentioned you wanted to get into being a dentist.
Yes.
What led to that interest?
So I always wanted to be a dermatologist, which I'm not really sure why, but that started in sixth grade. But then, you know, as I was getting closer to college, I was like, man, like 12 to 15 years of school, I don't know about that. So I've always wanted to help people, but just not in a way that, like, their life depends on me. So, like, I feel like teeth is kind of the perfect example of that, is, like, I can help someone feel more confident, but, like, I don't necessarily have to have them open on a table, you know, for me to help them. So that's kind of my thing, I guess. It's kind of my forte.
So you don't want their life to depend on it. So you can fix their teeth great.
Yeah.
But if you don't, well, it's just teeth. That's fine. No move.
Well, you know, it's just more like a confidence builder, you know? At least they're not, like, walking around with one arm or something because I messed up. So, you know, if they're missing a tooth, hopefully they'll come back and you can fix it again. Do a little more research. You know, it's not that deep, but yeah.
And a lot less school.
Yeah, it's about 7 years, so that's, I cut it in half. That was kind of one of the main decisions there, but yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to you being a dentist, and hopefully somebody will, you know, visit your dentist office and come back and report back someday on how things go.
With no lisp, all teeth there, that would be great, you know? Trying my best here, so come visit me.
Oh, man, we'll look forward to it. Sam, thanks for the time, really appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you so much.
That is Sam Unteed. She is a defensive specialist for South Dakota in her sophomore season, a native of Minnesota, and a transfer from the Louisville Cardinals. Great to catch up with her and chat about her first season in a Coyote uniform. Coyote women's basketball team had a roller coaster of a season a year ago, and the Coyotes made a lot of changes to the roster. Had a chance to catch up with Carrie Amy and talk to her about her team this season, with a lot of new faces ahead of their exhibition Saturday in Sioux Falls.
Coach, the season is fast approaching. In fact, your team at the this weekend will play an exhibition game in Sioux Falls against Colorado State. Before you know it, a couple of weeks later, it'll be game week. Does it feel like it's kind of crept up, or is it coming at you real fast right now?
Well, you know, I think a little bit of both at times. You know, when you look at the list of things you still got to get in and you still got to work on, it seems to be coming fast. And at the same time, I'm sure our players feel like it's time to play somebody else. You know, you spend all summer and then preseason and playing against each other all the time. And so, you know, I think they're really looking forward to having an opportunity to compete against somebody else.
Let's talk about the process to even get to this point. After last season, you had a lot of, you know, really hard conversations with some players, and they had to make the decisions for themselves, and you're trying to help make decisions for the program. And at the end of it, I remember the Calling All Coyotes event had two players there representing it. Coral and Olivia have been trying to hold this thing together, the South Dakota girls, but really almost an entire roster flip. What was that process like for you and your staff as you tried to put this thing together for this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always a tough transition, you know, and it's like you said, athletes, student athletes making decisions for themselves, me making decisions for our program and the direction that we want to go. And sometimes, you know, those aren't good fits or for whatever reason. You know, we had some attrition and some changes. And you know, as soon as that happens, then the mindset has to flip to, okay, let's you know, use all of our resources and get into the transfer portal and whatever case that might be to try to you know, build a roster that maybe fits a little bit more of the direction that we're headed and that we want to continue to move toward, and one that I'm probably a little bit more familiar the style of, you know, coaching a group of players that fits the system.
It's an interesting process because some people look at the transfer portal as, wow, that can be a quick fix, and it can, but you also have to get the players out of there that can play together, that work for you. How do you try to, you know, when you're recruiting and you're building with younger players, you kind of learn those players a little bit, and you get to know who's going to fit in your system, who's going to work well together. How do you do that with the transfer portal?
Well, I think like you just said, it's personality, it's character. You know, for us, it's always about trying to find players who are good players themselves, but that they want to be a part of a good team. You know, so that selflessness and that desire to want to have good players around them as well is extremely important. You know, we've kind of always held pretty firm in making sure that we're adding players of high character. You know, that's not something that we're going to budge on, because we feel like it can really mess up the chemistry. And obviously with women's teams, chemistry is extremely important. And so I think we start there, you know, and then it's, you know, just figuring out position wise and versatility wise and, you know, all the different, you know, areas that we laid out, you know, where do we need to get better, how do we need to get better, and what does that look like, and then you start working from there. You know, and for us, it was, you know, important to find some size and a couple of players who are capable of playing in the paint and on both ends of the floor, and obviously finding some point guards. Obviously losing Grace as a point guard was huge, and so finding both experience and talent at that position, it was extremely important. And then you just fill pieces in, you know, and feel like we were able to create a versatile roster, create a roster with some good athleticism. And then the other magical piece, I think, for not just right now, but in the future, is making sure that you're not adding, you know, 9 or 10 seniors. Yep. and having to do it all over again the following year. And so trying to balance out some of those classes is also a goal that you have while you're operating in the portal and building a team. So there's a lot of different things going on at one time, and it has to happen really quickly. You know, sometimes you recruit a high school kid for 2 or 3 years. You might recruit a portal kid for 2 weeks. So you have to do a lot of homework in a short amount of time.
Well, I think fans are going to need to bring a roster to the game. They're going to get to know this team very quickly. Obviously, a lot of new players. What has been the process now? Okay, you get through summer, and now you're going through workouts. You're getting ready for the season. Obviously, some of it is improving, you know, skill sets and things like that as you get ready for the games. But there has to be an element of chemistry building with this group, because this is a completely new roster.
Yeah, and I think what you just said is kind of the progression that we used. In the summer, it was very much let's put these players in situations where we can figure out not only what they do well individually, but what could they potentially do well together. And then from there, now it's been, okay, let's put them in some situations and you know, create our structure of our offense. And within that, allow them to build that chemistry and really get to know each other, and you know, what is this player most likely to do in this scenario. Those things that you kind of take for granted that people learn over time, our players are having to learn in a pretty short amount of time. Especially with players who are upperclassmen who only have a year left or maybe two, that process needs to happen much quicker. I also think that in some ways you have to be strategic about the offense that you run, because you don't have players who have had 2, 3, 4 years to learn it. They've got to be able to pick up on it fairly quickly and then again build that chemistry with their teammates in order to you know, be effective in it.
Generally, teams will play a couple of either scrimmages or an exhibition thrown in there. Obviously, your team will play an exhibition on Saturday. How important are those events just to get that game simulation that you can't really do with a team that has grown close to each other?
Absolutely. Every time you can play a game like, you know, situation, it's extremely important. Even if you bring in refs to practice, you know, I think that creates an element of game-like for our kids that, you know, they were like, man, we were kind of nervous when we had refs here the other day, you know. So I think being in that environment where it's very game-like, they're dealing not only with a unfamiliar opponent, but also their own emotions and their own, you know, the nervousness, the butterflies, all the things that come with game situation, to be able to kind of work through some of those things and become familiar again with those things before you play an actual game, I think is really, really important.
And Saturday's event is a free will donation. It's open to the public and something for a charity. How does something like this come together?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we're super fortunate to have a strong partnership with Sanford, and they were gracious enough to allow us to host the event at the Pentagon. And so that was a really important piece to the puzzle. And then, you know, obviously it's gonna be a fun evening to watch basketball, but also we've been fortunate to partner with Live Inspired 365, which is a local nonprofit in Sioux Falls that promotes mental health awareness and suicide prevention. You know, we've gotten to know them over the course of the last year. We love their mission. We love what they're about. And so we knew we wanted to make this live scrimmage a charity game, and Live Inspired 365 just makes such a positive impact in Sioux Falls, the state of South Dakota, and beyond. And so it was a no-brainer for us to invite them into what we were trying to do. And one of the ways we're partnering with them, as you mentioned, is by making it the admission into the game a free will donation to their organization. Fans will be able to conveniently scan a QR code and donate directly to their charity, to their organization. The QR code is currently available on our website and also will be available at the Pentagon on Saturday. And also, they'll accept checks at the door if that's, you know, people would prefer to give that way. So we're just super glad to be a part of helping them, you know, continue to drive conversations about mental health and to support the efforts to help prevent suicide, as pretty much everybody's affected by that in some way or another throughout their lifetime. So, yeah, we hope fans, Yoke fans, make their way to the Pentagon Saturday to get a sneak peek of our team and to support Live Inspired 365.
Yeah, great opportunity for a lot of people involved. You know, the other element to you building this team is obviously you had an assistant coach step away at the end of last season, and then Amber stepped away from coaching here a few weeks ago, but you filled out that staff. How has the staff come together as you prepare for this season?
Yeah, you know, it's funny how those things work. You know, we obviously, yeah, losing Amber, incredible person, obviously an alum here and has given so much to the program, but had an opportunity to you know, take a different job on campus and spend, you know, some more time with her family is a great opportunity for her. And Dalton Smith is who we hired. He's been at Kansas State for the last 3 years. Dalton is a former practice player for me way back at Nebraska Kearney. And so he spent a lot of time in our program before he became an assistant coach at Wayne and then, like I said, moved on to K-State. So he's been in the game for a while. He's been under great coaches. But when he stepped on campus, it was perfect because the timing wasn't fantastic, just in regards to, you know, we've already started practice and needed to find somebody who could acclimate quickly. And, you know, it's kind of felt like he never left our staff because we're just so familiar with him.
You get the season started here in just a few weeks. Obviously, you went through last season, your first year at South Dakota. As you look at the team right now, and games can change things, but you look at it right now, what do you want the identity of this team to be? When fans watch this team play, they leave the game, they talk about it. What do you hope that they recognize from this group?
Well, I think, you know, we've been saying this since we got here, but I think one of the biggest things is we want to be able to control the controllables, and we want to be able to be a team that when people show up and play us, they know it's not going to be easy, that we're tough. Both mentally and physically, that we defend with a high level of discipline and execution. And, you know, obviously part of that is finishing possessions with rebounds. You know, and then offensively, we're going to be a team that shares the ball. We work together to get great shots. You know, we obviously want to play fast, but sometimes that's dictated by the defense and whether or not they're going to let you play fast. So, you know, I think for us, you know, it's always been about making sure that we are valuing possessions and taking high quality shots as much as possible. It helps set up your defense. It makes sure that you're not, you know, having to defend in situations where you're playing transition defense with disadvantages all the time. So, you know, I think if we can do those things, right? I think that's kind of been a trait that people have admired about USD women's basketball for a very long time is the toughness, right, that they play with, that it's not going to be easy when you show up here to find a way to win in the SCSE, right? You know, and just the chemistry as well, like the playing together with each other, for each other, you know, I think that's going to be a really important piece for this team as well.
All right. I know a lot of people are looking forward to it. The season officially gets underway November 3rd against York University, part of a doubleheader with the men's team. Coach, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Have a great season.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
That is Kerri Amby, the head women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota, entering her second season as the head coach of the program. Coyotes will play Colorado State on Saturday in an exhibition. November 3rd is game number one for South Dakota. South Dakota back on the road this week. The Coyotes head to Cedar Falls to take on Northern Iowa. Both teams searching for a victory to try to propel here the rest of the way on the season. We're joined now by J.W. Cox. He is the play-by-play voice of the Northern Iowa Panthers. J.W., great to chat with you again. I know it's been kind of an up-and-down season, but a growing season under a new head coach.
Yeah, John, I think you're putting it the right way. I mean, it is up and down, and at times it's really up. Like, there's been some glimpses of this team on both sides of the ball. I go to last week against South Dakota State. As everybody knows, that's a real good football team, and they want to run the football. And the Panther defense was able to hold them in check under 3.5 yards per carry in that game. And so the defense is doing a lot of good things. You go back, and if you want some entertaining on the edge of your seat, though not a lot of scoring football, watch the third quarter of that South Dakota State UNI game, because the defense was forcing the Jacks off the field, and the offense coming out there with chances after chance and just never able to cash them in. So it's up and down is right, and growth is correct, because I think they're making strides from where they were in week one to where they are now headed into this seventh game for the Panthers. It's just finding a way to put it all together for enough of a game to come out with a win. And being home, that's the next best chance to do it, no matter who they're facing, and obviously another good team in the Coyotes. But they like that they're coming back home and see what they can do to defend the Dome.
Obviously, you know, as you talk about it, there's been some good, there's been some bad. It's a team that's 2-4 right now, losing 3 in a row. What's the feeling right now? Todd Stepps is in his first year, right? What's the feeling around the program as you talk about you're seeing growth out of this team? Sometimes when it doesn't show up in the win column, people have a hard time seeing the growth the way you do.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel that from a fan perspective. It might be difficult to just look at the final results, and it is a results-based business, and everybody top to bottom knows that. It might be kind of tough to dive into the minutia of what's been going on week to week. But more to the question, I think the more important thing is you look inside the program, you look at the players and how they're attacking each week, you look at the coaching staff and how they're attacking each week. That was a long 4.5 hours or whatever on the bus for everybody from Brookings last week to get back here after that loss, knowing that there were plays to be made and just disappointed in the way it went. But then by Sunday, everybody is able to turn the page. And that's just not using a phrase that everybody tries to use. You can see it in the attitudes of the players. You can see it in the attitudes of the coaches. There's disappointment. There's determination to turn it around and eventually get the results as well that follow the preparation and the work that they're putting in. But the attitude, and to borrow a phrase from the kids, I guess, John, is the vibes are incredible still for this Panther team, considering they have lost 3 in a row, considering that they've come up short in those games in ways that they've wanted to 4 times this year. You can tell by the positivity and the way that they're approaching that good things are going to happen. When that happens is still the question and still the key, because you don't win games with vibes, but it's a good place to start. And the feeling around the program is of overwhelming positivity despite some of those results.
Matthew Shekelman is the quarterback for Northern Iowa, and so far this season he's completing better than 70% of his, or 60% of his passes. Only a couple of games, and they're road games, under 60% on the year. But man, when he misses, they've turned into interceptions. 6 interceptions, 7 touchdowns. Seems like a guy that has a ton of talent and awareness and just got to clean up a couple of things.
Yeah, oh my goodness, the arm talent is there. It's incredible the throws that he can make. The offensive line still making strides to get a little bit better each week. He's got time to throw at times, and then sometimes it's on him and missing some of those reads. Sometimes it's on the pressure, forcing his feet to speed up a little bit. But yeah, the intangibles are there. And I think the biggest key, John, is when the mistakes happen, what happens next, right? You're going to get beat by a good defense in this league, right? The defenses are too good to go out there and throw a perfect game, right, and make every play hit, because it's just too talented, too well coached, and the defenses are going to make their share of plays too in games in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But what happens next? And that's been the gap for the Panthers in bouncing back from one of those drives that ends in an interception, doing it where you then put together another drive and say, all right, we can put that behind us and flush it and go down and still execute the way we were executing before that mistake. That just hasn't happened enough for the Panthers and Matthew Shekelman, and that's the growth part that has to be there for a guy who's really only made a handful of starts still in his career. He's been a starter all year this year, eventually became the starter last year halfway through, then got hurt again. So he's still very young in that process of knowing what it's like in a game. He's got all the tools. He's got all the preparation. He sees the game very well. The coach is highly confident complimentary of when the mistakes come or when good plays come. He knows why and he knows where and he knows where the football needs to go. But now it's just the mental side of how do I bounce back if and when the defense makes a play against me? How can I come back and turn it around and keep that from spiraling too many times?
Well, he certainly has the weapons to get it turned around because you've got some wide receivers at Northern Iowa that can really get it done. There's been explosive plays on the season and a wide variety of guys who can catch the ball.
Yeah, that's an exciting room, but it's also a room that could have been even more exciting with some injuries that happened early in the year and some nagging injuries that keep just coming back from guys. So it's the depth, I think, has been the biggest question. But, yeah, when you start with the three starters or the three top wide receivers that you get out there, Tyson Kershaw, who's just an automatic deep threat, Aiden Price, who is so sure-handed, and then once he gets the ball in his hands, he can make a lot of guys miss in space, and it's a yards after the catch equation for him. And then J.C. Roque is just one of those prototypical, versatile slot guys who has all kinds of speed. He's got to be one of the fastest guys in this league. So if you can find ways to consistently get the ball in his hands, he's going to be slippery enough to eventually break some for some big gainers. So it's a great three to start. I know this team, to really get where they want to go, they want to have more than those three to provide depth and keep those guys at the highest level possible. Some of that comes from the tight end, too, and Derek Anderson is a very capable pass catcher. Briggs Houston, another pass-catching tight end, and we could get some good news on that coming in the next couple of weeks with Brady McCullough, who was hurt late in fall camp and has been working back from a broken leg, but is getting closer and closer and is a huge weapon in the pass game. It can be a strength when you throw in what Matthew Shekelman can do. The depth would be nicer to have, but you know you've got three guys that are just ready and waiting on the outside or in the slot to make a play.
Now, one thing I know about Northern Iowa, and it's been this way for years, and I don't care who the head coach is, but you know they're going to bring a defense that can really get after it. They've got, man, a whole handful of tackles for a loss this season, a bunch of sacks on this group. This defense, I know it's given up a little bit of points and things like that, but you're talking about, you know, maybe late in the game, things like that. This is a defense that can get it done.
Yeah, and you look at the resilience, and this is something Coach Steffs has pointed out this week. The Panthers turned it over five times against South Dakota State in that game last week, but only gave up points off of one of those turnovers. That is wild to me, especially against a team that's the caliber of South Dakota State, right? You figure you're going to give them the football that many times, and then that's where they're going to get all their points. And yes, they eventually did, you know, end up scoring in the 30s, but not off of those turnovers, which tells me about this defense that it's a resilient bunch, that they'll go out there and say, all right, we got to strap it back up again. The offense isn't quite getting it done today, but we're going to hold and do our job. And that was the hallmark of the second, third quarter in that game. And Brookies, why it was still a game going into the fourth quarter, because the way that defense plays, it starts up front. I've been super impressed with how the defensive line for the Panthers has matured and come together. There was not a whole lot of experience on that defensive line coming into the year. A couple of key transfers from the junior college level, one key Division I transfer in Owen Ostrowski, and they're leading the charge for those tackles for loss that you're talking about, allowing the linebacker level to clean that up. And the other thing is the development of depth. They can play 10 different guys there up front, and as anybody in this league knows, that's been a key to success on the defensive line, is having that kind of depth. So that's been where it started for me and been super impressive. And then the leadership from the linebackers. You got a fifth-year guy in Tucker Langenberg who's seen a lot in this league. He's such a motivational leader. He's got his head on just in such the right way, knowing that this is a building point for this coaching staff and for the future of Panther football. He's not going to get to reap a lot of those rewards in coming seasons, but he is putting in such work with his teammates and with this team to put everybody in a position of success. And he's a leader that everybody can look up to and emulate, and that helps a lot of what that defense is doing this year.
Wait. Tucker Langenberg's only been there for 5 years?
Yeah, right. Seems like a while.
He's one of those guys that you just know is going to be a solid player, and you recognize him every single year. Obviously, a leader on that defense. Should be a really fun game on Saturday. Whiteout for Northern Iowa. And I know they've been making some changes, JW. How's the progress on the renovations of the Unidome?
I think, John, I appreciate you bringing that up, because when I talk about the positivity around the program, you cannot discount what that element and just the game day experience that that has helped enhance. And I know Yotes fans have experienced this with what has happened in the Dakota Dome over the last handful of years and the upgrades there. It feels very similar. You go in and you know it's the same building, but it just has a completely different feel and an elevated feel. Purple seats, purple walls. I don't know, as someone told me from the university side a couple of weeks ago, he can't figure out why it wasn't this purple from the beginning, right? Like, it's always been the Unidome. It's always been Panther football's home. A lot of other stuff happens. But the fact that now it's purple and you've got the ever loyal emblazoned everywhere and cat heads and all this kind of stuff, and the suites across the way for that level of things have just been an excellent add. You're going to notice a huge difference from the last time you were here a couple of years ago, certainly, John, and people have noticed that within the community, whether it's the diehard Panther fans that have just been clamoring to see all that purple at the games they've been going to for years, or if it's people in the community who maybe now they're in there for one of the few times they've ever been in there. It's an impressive upgrade with some more things to come, and that's been a huge enhancement of what this football program is and can be moving forward.
All right, we're looking forward to it, no doubt. Should be a great one on Saturday. JW, appreciate your time very much. We'll see you this weekend.
All right, thanks, John.
That is JW Cox. He is the radio play-by-play voice of the Northern Iowa Panthers, and a preview of what we can expect for the matchup on Saturday, South Dakota and UNI. This just sets up to be a tremendous football game on Saturday at Northern Iowa. So hopefully you can make the trip, but if not, catch the action on the Coyote Sports Network, or it's also available on the ESPN Plus platform. All right, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. You can get tickets to the Hall of Fame dinner. It is October 24th in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Tickets are open to the public, so you can do that at goyotes.com or call the ticket office for more information during business hours. That is next Friday ahead of the game against Illinois State. Take a look at what else is going on Friday. The cross-country team is set to run in Peoria, Illinois for the Bradley Pink Classic. Swimming and diving is in Lawrence, Kansas to compete against Kansas and Missouri S&T. That event is set for both Friday and on Saturday as well. The football team, of course, Northern Iowa, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Cedar Falls. Our pregame show on the Coyote Sports Network gets underway at 12 o'clock. Kickoff is set for 1 p.m. at Northern Iowa. Women's soccer will be home on Saturday afternoon as they host South Dakota State. That matchup with the Jackrabbits gets underway at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You can go right from that to volleyball, because the volleyball team takes on South Dakota State at 6 o'clock in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Tickets are available at goyotes.com. And women's basketball will play Colorado State in the Pentagon in Sioux Falls, 6 p.m. on Saturday evening. That's a free will donation. Again, those proceeds go to support Live Inspired 365. Looking ahead to next week, Monday, both the men's and women's golf teams will be in action. The women's golf team at the Power Cat Invitational in Manhattan, Kansas. That is set to run Monday and Tuesday. And the men's golf team will be in Matthews, Louisiana for the La Tour Intercollegiate, hosted by Nichols. That is Monday and Tuesday. And then volleyball will play next Tuesday as they play at North Dakota State. So another midweek matchup for Coyote volleyball. That is what is going on in Coyote Athletics. Catch a game, match, or meet very, very soon and get your tickets and all the schedule information at goyotes.com. That's it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. And as always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.